email ray@rte.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
We're in Limerick today, live from the Limerick studios. We're here in the heart of Limerick. And there is a festival this year, or this even this weekend. And one of the guests over the weekend is Denise Chyla. And Denise joins me in studio. Good afternoon, Denise.
Hi, Ray. How are you?
Good. Good to talk to you. You're part of the All We Have Our Days Festival. We'll talk about that later on. We've been trying to talk to you for an awful long time.
Have you? Really?
And I know you don't like the word fan, but I'm an admirer of your music. And that's why we want to talk. And we regularly play on Shaw or, you know, Chyla or whatever on the show.
Thank you.
It's great to meet you.
And
this is your home.
Yes, this is my home. Welcome home. Yeah.
And you're effusive in your descriptions when it comes to Limerick.
Yeah, I think deservedly so, because I have a pretty long-standing journey through Ireland. I've lived Galway, Dublin, and a couple of other places, but like really, I connected here as like maybe it was like the right place, the right time for me to receive what this place has to give and for me to give back. But like I definitely put down severe roots here.
You have to explain why Limerick, though.
I have a soft spot for people who have been considered the underdog, proving themselves to be everything they always said they were in the first place. I remember before I came here, I was in secondary school, and my friends were like, "Oh, you're moving to Limerick?" Because I was supposed to go to Trinity to do a history degree, and I ended up going to UL to do a politics and international relations degree because my dad was working at the regional. Shout out to the regional, lots of good friends there. But like, I just wanted something that broke me out of the social space I was in. I was living in Lucan. I was up by the old forge next to the Centra, and I was feeling very like, oh, how big is the world? How big is the island? You know, what do other people talk about? And I'd only heard of Limerick through like soft whispers on the wind of Colchis. I had no idea what that even was because I was too young when I moved to Ireland.
You didn't know
to
what a
Colchi
was.
Nah, like when I first moved here, I had no idea what a Colchi was. Yeah. Like I had no idea, but like it took me a couple years. And then by the time I was like saying, let me go to Limerick City, I just wanted an experience of Ireland that I hadn't had because like Dublin can be its own universe. It's its own microcosm sometimes. And so like when I first came here, I spent properly 6 months getting used to like the lilt of the accent, the way people move, like the manners of people, you know, what does it mean to actually be here? And I like puns and I'm a nerd. So I was like, oh my God, I want to write poetry in the county called Limerick.
Oh, Limerick.
Yeah, do you know?
Oh, of course.
Yeah. So we're doing layers, right?
That's clever enough.
Yeah, I come through, yeah. I thought about it a little bit.
It's not completely obvious, yeah.
Yeah.
So your dad works in the regional hospital here.
He does, yeah.
And does your mom work there as well?
My mom works at Ennis.
Right.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. And so mom is a radiographer. Dad is a neurologist. They're both terribly smart.
And do you have brothers and sisters?
I do, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I've got a younger sister whose birthday it is today, actually. Kimberly, happy birthday to you. And a younger brother who just got a job at a place that I'm very proud of him for going for. So congratulations, Matthew, as well.
That's good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And your parents are originally from Zimbabwe?
Zambia,
sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
The other Z, sorry.
Yeah, we're neighbors, you know. Yes, borders are colonial. I don't even know what to say. We were once the same tribe. It's fine.
Yeah. I've read loads of interviews you've done. I've spent the trip down listening to all your stuff again.
Wow.
You feel, I suppose, a pressure, I sense, that you, because you have a platform, because you're a performer and you have a microphone and you say words or sing words.
Sometimes, yes.
And because you I suppose this is the question then. Do you feel you represent somebody other than yourself?
You know what? I did like in 2022. Like I remember when all this happened. It happened in the middle of COVID. And so I sort of called it my dark, twisted Hannah Montana fantasy because it was very like everything I'd ever dreamed of. But with this element of like vocalizing things about politics that had actually really scared me. Growing up, I wasn't that outrageously like outspoken about a lot of things because, you know, you're a teenager. I hadn't really gained my confidence yet. And when my music began, I was just at this sort of perfect tipping point to allow my rubber to meet the road and, like, get my inside outside in a way that, like, felt really honest. And then when it all kind of started happening, it was like in this sort of genuine bubble of isolation where everyone's in their homes. And I'm the only person who it feels like can, like, be in the world making music and trying really hard.
So you, for example, I think were on The Late Late Show when there was no audience.
Exactly. Those kind of things. And so, like, it was a dream for me. And then, like, I think after a while, knowing that I'm primarily, like, a person in the tiny glowing screen of somebody's phone, as opposed to somebody who they'd seen me, like, in the flesh and the blood with all of my nuances and, like, eccentricities and stuff. I got in my head about that for a while, and it took some good friends to,
okay, now,
like,
you have to, I want to tease that out.
Do it.
But is that,
are
is
we
that,
doing therapy?
No, we're not doing
that's
therapy.
Okay. I trust you to do that. Let's go, Ray.
No.
Let's do it.
No. What I'm saying is that I suppose nobody knows somebody else ever fully. In fact, we probably don't know ourselves fully ever.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what you were saying there is that people responded to a sort of this small image of you that wasn't fully formed. And how did they react, some people?
You know what? In two very different and very life-changingly, you know, interesting extremes, some extremely poorly and some extremely well. And what I found was that I had to learn how not to be in my mid-20s. I had to sort of learn very quickly how to park the insecurities and the sort of, like, existential who am I's for a moment and, like, speed run a sense of maturity that, like, I really needed. Otherwise, I would have collapsed under the weight of trying to be something that I wasn't. And so, like, you know, 2022, I was, like, really in the middle of, like, a what do I have to give? You know, what do I have to give that isn't about selling something or promoting something? How do I become a person in my music and remain a person in my music without feeling like I'm constantly flogging it? Because that's not the point.
Here. Right. Okay.
Yeah.
So is it about control, a bit about control? Is it a bit about not having the pressure of somebody telling you what way to do things?
No, I think it's more about protection. I want to protect the part of me that wants to connect with people. I really like people.
Yeah.
I really like seeing people happy. One of the most rewarding things I've ever seen is, like, when I'm at, like, performing at a gig and there's someone in the front row and, like, once or twice it's been, like, a young woman with her hands just pressed to her chest looking at me. And I look back and I'm like, wow, I wrote most of these songs in my bedroom by myself, just not really hoping much for what they would do, and now here you are and here I am, you know.
This is an odd observation, and it's a truism in a way, but when you rap you use a lot more words than when you sing. And all of your songs are loaded down with you're sort of, it is like you're telling us who you are, you're exposing yourself to us in a real way. You're telling us how you feel about racism, you're telling us how you feel about being Irish, you're telling us how you feel about being queer or whatever. Yes. All those things are there.
Yeah.
Like, is that very tiring?
Yes.
Yeah.
but only because we're never trained to give away that much of ourselves. In fact, our brains tell us it's not safe because a lot of the time, you know, people get shocked by vulnerability. You know, not everybody can make it safe for you to say something real and not, like, blame yourself for, like, 3 weeks afterwards going, like, why did I show that much of myself? But
what? How do you answer that question when you ask it? Because, you know,
my life is worth living.
Yes, but I suppose you write a song in a moment.
Yeah.
Which passes.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're still yourself, but you may have, you know, your opinion, your attitude, something may have changed or not.
But it's like a loss of control, truly, too. It's like it's the same way that you trust your family to not hold the things that you did when you were 5 against you when you were like 50. You know, like I feel like all of this is like a growing experience. And I'm here as a person, not as like a finite, like,
Okay.
Yeah.
How do your parents feel about all of this?
You know what? Sometimes my dad sends me text messages about how he's not able to get through his clinics without people like interrupting their very valid health concerns by telling him, "Are you Denise's dad?" Do you know? And so he'll text me and or he'll call me and he'll be like, "Hey, there's somebody here who likes your music and they like it a lot. And maybe you can say hi. And then after that, I can talk to them about their health as their doctor." And I'm like, "Yeah, that's fine." So he's very good about telling me that he's very proud of me. And actually, so is my mom. Every so often, she's like, "Here's how to make your business better. Yeah. Let me help you. I want to be your manager." "No, thank you. But I love you."
Was that a genuine offer from your mom?
Yeah. And she would be a great manager. Don't get me wrong. But like, I've watched documentaries.
Yes.
I want to love her into our old ages. Yes.
Never ends well.
Yeah, that's my mom. We're going to stay cool.
So you say you studied in UL here.
Yes.
Politics and?
International relations. And then I did sociology and English because I couldn't get enough of my lectures.
Right.
Yeah.
And you completed both?
Nope.
No.
Yeah. And we'll leave that there.
But I suppose I'm interested to know, you know, when did music take over? Because that's...
Me too. It wasn't the plan.
Yeah.
It wasn't the plan at all. Oh, my goodness. You know, friendships can change your life. I basically was just friends with people who, for the first time, unlocked that part of my curiosity and made it permissible for me to like give it my full attention.
But were you even doing the, you know, the hairbrush in front of the mirror in the bedroom?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, that's been a part of my personality. That's been me since I was born.
You kept that hidden from everybody, did you?
No, actually. This is one of the greatest misconceptions about my personality. I'm very, very upfront about all of my stuff. So like when I was growing up, I was always like, you know, like throwing myself in, like volunteering for things. You know, I want to be a leader at a summer camp. I want to be doing musical theater. I want to go to that acting camp. I want to, you know, sit down and do the book club. I want to do all these things.
You want to be involved.
Yes,
be involved.
I do. I want to join the choir.
Yes.
Yeah, I like people. I want to do stuff with them. But I think that my aspirations were always to be a thespian. Like I loved acting.
Right.
I loved writing. I loved writing fiction. I loved Terry Pratchett and Douglas Adams and Tolkien. I kind of consumed a lot of books voraciously.
Yeah.
Yes, amongst other things, Steering the Craft by Ursula K. Le Guin was the only like writing manual that I ever read that meant
Steering
something.
Steering the Craft.
Yes, Steering the Craft. It's amazing.
Tells you how to write.
Yeah, it tells you that there's no right way to write.
Yes,
and here's all the ways to give yourself, you know, permission to just be a person that's different. But I've not been quiet about that. I just didn't. I had this internalized notion that my parents would be disappointed with me if I attempted to do the arts. And so I kind of just stuffed all my dreams under the carpet. And then
because there you were looking at them, radiographer.
Yeah, they're impressive. You're so impressive.
That's interesting, though. So what sort of pressure does that put? And you're the eldest.
Yes.
Yes. So what sort of pressure does that bring?
In my older age, I've discovered mostly invented pressure because actually nobody cares as much as I thought that they did. Mm. But in my youth, in my far-flung youth, I was just really scared of not showing the people who cared about me that I valued their effort and loved them back enough to involve their values in the way that I was making decisions for my life.
Mm.
And I've always wanted a community and like home and belonging. And that's actually what a lot of my work is about. So when I started to want music, I sort of kept it to myself for a long time because I thought to myself, is it selfish of me? Is it too individualistic of me to throw away everybody's hard work and effort to get me not only to Ireland, but in these schools and have these opportunities and not see it through because the call is getting too strong to do this other thing that looks crazy? And ultimately, I got to a point where I was like, I won't be able to live with myself.
If you don't do it.
If I don't do it, yeah. Because I was in these lectures and I was consuming what my lecturers was saying. And I was like writing, not notes, but like songs, like almost in response in my texts and in my notebooks.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a great scene for a movie.
It is, isn't it? yeah, that's what it was like, me in my big sweatpants rolling into a lecture like almost 5 minutes late, but like sitting at the back with my headphones like in, but like really paying attention nonetheless, and like volunteering despite my determination to be apathetic and, you know, coach myself out of being interested in college so I can like devote myself fully to music, because I still felt like a charlatan.
So how did that conversation go then when you said to your parents?
So it didn't happen as a conversation.
They did not know.
No, they knew, but not because I was brave enough to talk to them like an adult about it. So what happened was I dropped out of college, kind of, sort of, not really. I basically went to my lecturer and I was like, well, how do I do this? And they were like, well, here's the process. And then I took four steps and then didn't complete the process and was like, hey, guys, I'm not in college anymore because I'm making an a mixtape.
Right.
And my mom and dad were just like, well.
But your dad had brought you to spoken word sessions or poetry sessions, had he? Is that?
Yeah, well, he was my traveling buddy.
Yeah.
Because I was too shy to go on my own and volunteer to an open mic my internal thoughts and feelings. So when I was finished college, it was around the same time dad knocked off work. And he would, like, scoot me by UL, and he'd take me to the White House in town, and we'd park up the road by the commercial, and we'd walk down, and he'd just stand me in a room with me and all of these Seamus Heaney kind of older poets, and I'd get up there, and I'd do Lauryn Hill and Def Jam poetry, and he'd always clap, doesn't drink, so he just sat there with a glass of water in his hand at a table, and was always just kind of the friend I needed to just be a quiet support.
So he probably half knew.
Oh, he knew. Yeah. Like, I'm not that good at keeping a secret, so my parents always know everything that's happening with me. Anyone who's close to me always knows everything that's happening with me.
So you alluded earlier on to around 2020 and COVID, and then it all happened. It exploded for you, and there was supporting Ed Sheeran in Croke Park.
Yeah.
And then there was recording with Ed Sheeran, and we won't be able to talk to Denise Child anymore because she's going to go global.
Yes.
Is that the way it was going in your head, or what was it? What way was it going in your head?
It was like kind of getting into a point of like escalation where I was like, this is beautiful and amazing, and I haven't had a break in 7 months. I haven't had like a time to sit down and be with my family in a long time. I haven't really taken a breath between going to different countries for these European tours in too long. And I had this moment where I was like, I think I see how this industry makes people a little bit out of touch. I understand how you lose kind of a connection with your own center of gravity just being in that cycle for too long. Mm. And I watched myself kind of like see my personal relationships suffer because I was distracted by work so much that I couldn't actually have a life. But the thing about music is that it's interesting. Like, you need your personal tethers to keep you grounded enough to come back down to earth, but also give you something that you want to keep writing about.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing really worth saying unless it's connecting with your chest. And it's that personal root that connects you to your chest. And I was moving a bit too far from it.
That's a bit of a bind, though, isn't it?
Because
you've been pulled both ways, aren't you?
I prefer to think of it less like that and more like you're being invited to have a backbone. not that's a bit too much, but like, you know, you're just being invited to say no or yes.
I have to ask you, like, where are you at now? You know, like with music production.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness, I've made so much music. Oh my goodness, I've made so much music in the last 2 years.
And when are we going to hear it?
Yeah, this year.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, you're going to hear more than music from me this year, actually.
More than music?
Yeah, because as I said, I'm a writer first.
Uh-huh.
I'm a writer, I'm a gamer, and over the last...
Is there a book? Yes, there is a book. I'll tell you.
I'm not the person who has said that out loud the air.
But you did.
That's not what I've
said. If there's such a thing as a knowing smile, I just witnessed one.
Well, listen, right? This book or not book comes out,
is it a memoir? No.
I like Douglas Adams and Terry Pratchett and Tolkien and C.S. Lewis.
And the other thing, how do you feel Ireland is going, now, for you?
How do I feel Ireland is going? To be honest, Ray, I don't know. I feel like the world is going in a direction. I think that for a long time we've kept America as a sort of political testing point for the temperature of how we're going to be moving, at least like in terms of Western media and ideology, for a minute as the sort of leader of the free world. And I'm interested in patterns and seeing the way people move. So I'm seeing two really interesting shifts, one in the direction of like, let's try to pull the wool over people's eyes, create like gaps and separations between us that don't exist and attempt to aggrandize others by stepping on other people. And that feels comforting for a while, but it doesn't really last. It's not sustainable, and it's a very violent path of heartache. But I also see a lot of people who are unwilling to keep quiet about how organized and how violent the right ideologies can be, And I've been really vocal for a long time about the fact that I do not tolerate any hint of Nazism or fascism in my world, let alone my work. But I am in Ireland and have stayed in Ireland for over like half of my life since I was a child, because I believe in the spirit of just courage that exists here. I believe that like there is something beautiful about Irish people and culture that is a combination of grace and resistance, of revolution and poetry, of mythology and truth and pragmatism. And I think that that's worth protecting. And I think that there are other places around the world that love this place and that connect with it in ways that our history does not reflect yet. And I hope that in my career, I'm able to find ways to allow us all to connect the bridges, because this is a diaspora nation with people around the world. I'm a diaspora person with people around the world. And those connections cannot be denied, no matter what we do, so hey.
Wow. Put a beat to that. Very uplifting just hearing her laugh. Lovely interview, and she's a beaut to listen to. I love her. And that lady has the best laugh ever. I love it, says Franklin Farm. That's Denise Chaila, Chaila. Spell it out and say my name, all that. I'm so envious, Ray. I'd love to meet that fantastic, charismatic, fiery, unstoppable Denise one day, says Simon. And Denise is an amazing young lady with a wonderful talent. We are more than happy to call her a Limerick lady. She is a bright and incredible future ahead, and she'd do it all from Limnock. Carol from Limerick. So there you go.
I didn't know that people were writing in, and now I'm going to cry.
Listen, thank you so much
for
coming in.
Thank you so much for this
conversation. Thank you, and good luck with the year ahead of you, because it sounds like it's going to be a really exciting one.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Denise.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.